History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by the U.S. Army, proudly honoring the men and women from every branch of our armed forces whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some untold stories that we think ought to be told. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we take that journey, we learn a lot. We are educated, we're entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, I am in Stockton, California, with a guy you really don't want to mess with. And he's got the shooting targets from the shooting range to prove it. We'll save the score that he posted at the range for you for a little later. But he's got a lot of experience in law enforcement and in the military. One of three brothers to serve in World War II. And a former deputy police chief here in Stockton, Les Novaresi, my guest today. So, Les, where do you fit in with those other two brothers of yours?
I'm the last of the brothers. I'm the youngest.
You're the baby.
I'm the baby. That's it. I'm the baby brother.
Well, and if people hear your last name, Novaresi, they assume, well, he must be Italian. But your heritage is a little different. Where did your parents immigrate from?
Switzerland. And I'm part German, part Italian, so I've got a little everything in me.
Did they ever tell you any stories about their homeland or why they came here to America?
Oh, they came here for the land of milk and honey. They thought the pot of gold was here, and they ended up in a dairy ranch.
Yeah, when you said milk, that wasn't figurative. That was literal.
Literally, right.
So did you grow up milking cows?
No, I milked a few, but we left the dairy ranches when I was about 7 or 8, and we moved to Stockton, California, where I went to school.
Yeah, so you're here in Stockton in 2019, but you were here in the 1930s. How much has changed since then? How is this community different?
Well, when I came here, it was only about 35,000. Now it's about 350,000. There's quite a change in it. You could leave the doors open at night. There's a lot of crime here now, so it's completely different.
And what kinds of things were you up to as a kid? What were the things that kept you occupied or kept your mind occupied?
Nothing, just playing like kids, playing baseball, basketball, football, generally just what kids do, and then going out to the ranches, the Swiss ranches, and helping milk cows and working the ranches. But other than that, the boy things, that's what we did.
Did you get along pretty well with your brothers?
Oh, yeah, loved them. They were great brothers.
Do you remember, I know it's a long time ago, but do you remember at that age having these thoughts in your head of, hey, when I grow up, here are the things that I'm going to do?
No, I was just trying to make it through life. At that time, I didn't really have any idea what was I going to do. Then the war came along, and bingo, I was drafted. That was not the very nice time of my life, but I got through it, came home, went in the police department, and that was the rest of my life, and then I retired from then.
But you haven't retired from your practice with your firearms. How often do you go out and shoot to keep your eyes and your aim right?
Well, we go out twice a week. We got Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then it takes about an hour and a half to shoot. And then we go with all the old-timers and go to breakfast and shoot the breeze and lie to each other about how good we were.
Well, I know there's some truth with your story, too, about how good you were and how good you are. We'll get to that. But you mentioned the war came along. What do you remember about that? What was December 7th, 1941 like for you here in Stockton? How'd you find out?
Well, I think it was on the radio, but it was kind of traumatic. I remember that. But I was so young, I don't really, it's not that clear how it affected me. It was just, I remember the Pearl Harbor came about, and then my brother had already been in the service. He went in when he was 17, but I don't really remember a hell of a lot about it.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned your older brother, Sid. So now he's at war. Was that a concern to you? Did that rock your world a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I was worried about it because he was in the service, and I was worried about what was going to happen. And we were expecting the Japanese to attack the coast. In fact, he was guarding the coast at that time. No, we just, it was a terrible time. I remember that. Everybody was scared to death about the Japanese attacking. So, you know, that's the way it went.
Well, and I'm curious too, since you are here in California, San Joaquin Valley, where agriculture is the thing that drives the economy. And back then, there was a fair amount of the agriculture being carried out by Japanese Americans. Did you go to school with some Japanese American students?
Yes. Yeah, no, I went to Catholic school. There weren't any Japanese in my class. And then by the time I got to high school, they were all in the camps by then. But they had a lot of businesses here that they lost and homes that they lost. So, but I think now that people are really concerned about it now, about how we took their rights away and everything. But at that time, it was really a different story. You know, it was really pretty traumatic that we thought they were going to be spies and all that other stuff.
So that's what the buzz was. That's what the community felt was, this is a real concern.
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, we were, everybody at that time, you know, the Japanese were our enemy. And so we certainly weren't going to, you know, treat them fairly, I don't think.
Well, if we were to drive over right now to the fairgrounds here in Stockton, right by the main gate, we would find a California historical marker that reads, "Here within the confines of the San Joaquin County Fairgrounds, enclosed by barbed wire and housed in temporary barracks, 4,217 San Joaquin County residents of Japanese ancestry, predominantly American citizens, were interned from May 10th to October 17th, 1942, under Executive Order 9066. It continues, "May such usurpation of civil, social, and economic rights without specific charges or trial never again occur." Again, that's the historical marker you can read if you're ever at the fairgrounds in Stockton, California. There were 125 barracks covering the infield area of the racetrack and another 40 barracks just east of the fairgrounds. The people held there temporarily were eventually moved to internment camps in Arkansas and Arizona. All told, of course, close to 120,000 Americans of Japanese ancestry were forced from their West Coast homes and moved inland, where they were held captive, as we've heard about quite a bit over the years on this program. So this is what's happening around you, Les, while you're in high school. And let's jump back into how you experienced those years. So your brother's in the service, and now he's at war, and you know now what kind of long career he had that we can talk about. But what about you and Elmo, your other brother? Were you guys thinking you were going to end up at this at some point too?
Oh, yeah, we knew the draft was coming, and I tried to get in the Air Force at the time, but that didn't work out. So here come the draft, and Elmo left first, and then I left about a year and a half later. Elmo went to Europe, and I went to the Pacific.
And when you say you wanted to fly, is that because there was an Army Air Corps base here in Stockton, and you saw those planes all the time?
Right. It was out at the airport, Stockton Airport. Yeah, they were training bomber pilots here at the time, yeah.
In fact, Stockton Army Airfield was the first advanced flying school on the West Coast. They started training pilots there almost a year before the attack on Pearl Harbor. Once it hit full speed, the base was graduating a class of 200 cadets about every 8 weeks or so. Of the 3 dozen pilots who participated in what some would regard as World War II's most daring and improbable mission, the Doolittle Raid on Tokyo in April 1942, 11 of those 36 were graduates of Advanced Pilot Training School at Stockton Field. So this was an important spot on the map, and Stockton, California has some impressive history when it comes to American air power in World War II.
So you'd be out at school and see those things flying over?
Yeah, right. And my brother was, at that time, he was interested in aviation, and he finally went in the Air Force. He was in the artillery at the time when he first went in, and then he applied for the cadets, and he ended up as a cadet in Alabama. And when he graduated, I think in 43, he became a second lieutenant.
Yeah, and he went and flew overseas and then stayed in the service and ended up a major general. But for you, so one brother's gone, another brother's gone, and the draft comes for you.
Yeah.
What was it like saying goodbye to your mother and father now, who've seen three boys go off to war?
It was terrible. I remember when I left, I was real terrible. I was walking up the street to leave for the Fort Ord. My God, it was terrible. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was the baby of the family. I really was a terrible time for me. But when I got to camp, of course, you assimilate into the other fellas there. But it wasn't a good time for me.
Well, what was it like assimilating? What were the things you had to get used to with Army life as a teenager?
Getting along with different people and having chow with all these people and then sleeping in the barracks and marching and drilling and shooting. And it was a whole new world. I had never left home before, like many people. So it was a whole new world for me. But I made it. I assimilated. Finally, you make buddies. You finally get along with everybody.
Well, and I guess I should clarify. I mean, you got drafted. You hadn't finished high school yet. You actually had to leave high school?
That's right. Yes, I did. I was a junior, I think. Yeah. My brother was a senior. But he, when he left, a teacher would send him class work, and he graduated while he was in the service, and then my mother went and picked his graduation certificate up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I didn't do that. I had to come back and finish.
Well, and you had to get back. You had to get through the war and get back to finish. What are some of the things you remember about the training you went through or the way they whipped you into shape?
Well, they were very severe. You know, they called you all kind of names, and you had to march and run out of the barracks and drill and shoot. And it was just very traumatic for a young guy. You know, I was 18 years old. You finally get used to it, and it's a way of life. But I never really got accustomed to really enjoying the military. Mm-hmm. Never.
And what kind of unit did they end up putting you in?
I ended up in an infantry unit, a rifle company, mm-hmm. in the 7th Division, I Company. I ended up on training in Fort Ord and Fort Lewis and Hawaii. And then I got on a boat, and they shipped me out, and I ended up in Okinawa. That was it.
Well, and as people know, Okinawa is the tail end of the war, but I imagine as you joined these guys as a replacement in this rifle company, were there some guys who'd been there and done that, who'd been through a lot of this?
Yeah, there was a lot of old-timers. I was just a fledgling, and it was another bad experience. You know, your war is I don't even remember a hell of a lot about it, really. You kind of block that stuff out. But I do remember some of the good things, you know. Right after the campaign, my brother was stationed at Aoshima, which is an island off of Okinawa.
And I know our listeners are going to want to hear this story about your older brother, Sid, and how you two connected there, half a world away from your hometown of Stockton, California. But we need to catch our first break. Les Novaresi is our guest today. Check out the photos and videos of Les online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.